Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's August 1st. Currently, we've got 60 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 57 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Hopefully your Thursday is off to a great start. And I'll tell you what, we're dealing with some mostly sunny skies out there across most of the region here from Park City down towards the Heber Valley. But we are still dealing with some of that smoke and haze. So it's kind of being kind of blotched out a little bit by that smoke and haze. And we'll be dealing with that as we go into the afternoon hours. In fact, we are expecting another cold orange, unhealthy for sensitive group air quality situation as we get towards that time frame. So if you suffer from some of those respiratory illnesses like asthma or other things like that, just be aware that it's going to be another tough afternoon out there across the area. So be careful if you're recreating throughout the region. Now, as we go into the forecast, high temperatures for today, we're looking at highs approaching 90 degrees in Park City this afternoon. As you get into the Heber Valley, oh yeah, we're going to get 90 and higher. In fact, likely heading into the mid 90s to upper 90s. So we'll go with about 96, 97 degrees for the Heber Valley today. As we go into your Friday, we're going to be looking at, yeah, more of the same. That sunshine, smoke, and haze out there. But temperatures, that's going to be the big story. We're talking highs in the 90s in Park City, probably mid-90s. And then in the Heber Valley, we're talking temperatures, yes, welcome back to triple digits, back to 100 to 101 as we go into the afternoon with that smoke and sunshine throughout the day. Now, as we move into the weekend, we'll start to see some small-scale changes. We'll see a little bit of an increase in cloud cover, and that will also give us a little increase in moisture as well. So we'll go partly cloudy skies for your Saturday and Sunday. In Park City, we'll see those high temperatures into the upper 80s and lower 90s for your Saturday and Sunday. And in the Heber Valley, we're going to be seeing those temperatures in the 90s to near 100 degrees. So make sure you're staying hydrated. Make sure that you're protecting yourself, wearing light colored, loose fitting clothing. And of course, make sure that as you're going to be out and about, that you try to seek shade as much as possible while doing those outdoor activities, as we're going to be seeing those temperatures quite warm. Now, as we get towards your Sunday heading into next week, we're going to cross our fingers. We may see that high pressure slide far enough to the east to give us a little bit of monsoonal moisture. So that could lead to some of those isolated downpours and thunderstorms as we get into your Sunday heading into the beginning of next week. This is not going to be a widespread rain event. We sure do need it, but it's probably not going to be that. But some folks could get lucky with some isolated downpours. And of course, that could lead to some isolated flash flooding. So we'll be watching that heading into next week. And the heat looks to stick around, even though we may see that chance of rain. So highs will be in the upper 90s to right around 100 in the Heber Valley. And for Park City, we'll see those highs still climbing between 90 and 93 as we head into next week. So make sure that you are, again, taking those heat precautions. And of course, don't forget that sunscreen, because yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot of that sun in the coming days.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with our Mountain Trails Executive Director, Laura Anthony, with this week's Trails Report. Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson will be on the phone recapping yesterday's meeting. I'll be talking with Park City Community Foundation Board Member E.E. Sue, also the moderator of yesterday's community conversation on climate. She'll be joined by Senior Manager of Communications for Park City Mountain, Sarah Huey. And finally, instead of the winners of the 2024 Cocktail Mocktail Contest sharing their winning concoctions, Park City Restaurant Association Executive Director Ginger Wicks, and along with computer expert John Concannon, explaining how the contest was corrupted by a couple of the participants using bots to cast their votes. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include award-winning journalist for Fortune magazine, Jeremy Kahn. I'll be talking about his new book, Mastering AI, A Survival Guide to Our Superpowered Future. Then the owner and founder of Nexus IT, Earlfoot, walks us through the debacle behind the CrowdStrike technology update that upended healthcare and air travel over the last few weeks. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio. And of course, you can hear Cool Science Radio every Thursday from 9 to 10. Right now on the phone with us with our Trails Report, Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We have got a smoking hot weekend in front of us. Just to remind folks that when you see smoke in the air and it's starting to get thicker, it's really not that healthy to be out on the trails getting your heart rate up. So, you know, I hate to be that one, but maybe keep it keep it chill this weekend, especially if you're traveling with an animal, a dog, a horse or whatever. It's going to be hot and dry and smoky. It gets real hard on their bodies too. So just be aware of that. But on the bright side, we have Dave from Basin Rec reporting in that the Basin Rec Trailside Bike Park will be hosting the Downhill and Grill on Saturday from 4 to 7 p.m. So swing by for some food, music, bike laps on the track there. And there will be local organizations such as Backcountry, National Ability Center, Live Like Sam, and Wills Foundation, and the Women's MTB Group. So that'll be really a good time out at the Trailside Bike Park. Next week, it looks like there will be limited parking starting Monday at the Willow Creek Park. They're going to be resurfacing the perimeter, the trails in that area. So it might be a great time to explore something new if you're a Willow Creek Park walker, runner, dog walker. This will be a better time to find somewhere else to play for about a week. Looks like Rick is telling us that Salt Lake Running Company's Park City Trail Series holding the half marathon in Round Valley on Saturday out of Quinns Junction. So expect trail impacts from about 8 a.m. until noon. There'll be a lot of parking and a lot of activity there in the Round Valley Trail System. Great place to, again, find something new. Looks like Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting that Suffren Succotash and Wiley Canyon West between the bottom of Suffren and Leghorn Cutoff are temporarily closed due to road construction on the Jordan Elridge Trail System. She's asking that we please respect these closures. We are fortunate enough to have a developer who's developing the area and yet sees the importance of trail access. So they're allowing trail access in certain parts. But if you see a closed sign, do not go around it. It's dangerous, and we want to keep that privilege of using the trail system while it's being developed. They hope to reopen those trails by the end of August or early September, and that's a wrap for Thursday's Trails Report. Hope to see you out there and have a good one.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. Well, High Valley Transit is now operating bus service from the Jeremy Ranch Park and Ride to Silver Creek Village. KPCW's Connor Thomas has details.
The new 108 line follows the same route as the 101 between Jeremy Ranch and the Kimball Junction Transit Center. But after Kimball, it continues east along Bittner and Highland Drive to Silver Creek Village. It services 38 total stops, 13 of which are new. Launching the 108 line is the last item on a slate of bus route changes High Valley rolled out this year. One was reducing the 101 bus frequency from every 15 to every 30 minutes. The 108 runs every 30 minutes as well, which High Valley says will compensate for the reduced service between Jeremy Ranch and Kimball, where the two routes overlap. The 108's launch was delayed a couple months while High Valley hired additional drivers. The district started to service the route July 29th, the same day the 101 stopped servicing Junction Commons, previously known as Outlets Park City. But the 108 will still service the outlet mall, and riders can now track all of High Valley Transit's buses in real time by downloading the ETA Spot app. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a meeting recap, I have Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for joining us. Let's see, any updates on those fires burning in Summit County?
You know, I don't have a lot of updates there. I'm actually just driving by the one at the bottom of Echo Canyon, the Dicker fire that was so tenacious that was threatening power lines going over to Bountiful from the hydro generation at Echo Reservoir. It's out, of course, but I think I don't have any real information. I think the state had to come in on this one. It just got too big. You know, North Summit, we've put a lot of effort into it, but when you know time to hand stuff over to the state and the feds when it gets too big.
Okay, let's see what else. Do you recall a time where we've had so many, we being Summit County, have had so many fires in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think there have been past years that have been tough. I mean, this year is kind of a perfect storm in as much as we had some good moisture early and grew a lot of fuel, vegetation. and then the spigot turned off. You know, it's like just flipping a switch. And so everything's dried down, and so there's quite a bit of vegetative matter of fuel. And but I think we've had more catastrophic years where, but it's not over. You know, probably have 60 or more days of risk, you know, and through September. But certainly is a situation where we need to be very careful with fire and not cause any. And, you know, lightning strikes and natural causes are hard to deal with, but man-made are certainly the ones we should be focused on, man-caused, woman, you know, people-caused.
Yeah. The joint meeting agenda for the August 5th joint meeting with the Park City Council has been posted, and I noticed that the two groups will be discussing the Olympics announcement. I mean, looking ahead, I mean, what do you think some of those joint issues need to be?
Well, one minor regret I have is that I didn't go to Paris with Mayor Worrell and our chair, Molina, and others, because I think it would have been a terrific opportunity, to once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity. I think we're going to hear a report from them as to what they saw. I mean, we have a 10-year ramp leading up to the Games. My thoughts on it have been that it was great to see the governor and the speaker and the president of the Senate and a lot of leaders there so embrace these Olympics, and which will carry on political support for things that the games, for which the games can be a catalyst, improvements that we need in Summit County, transportation and infrastructure and things. Not that the Olympics are going to pay for things, you know, for, you know, a 2-week, 3-week event, but provides a good catalyst for things that need doing anyway. And so I think it'll be great to hear their report and how soon there becomes an organizing committee like we had in 2002. You know, there's the bid committee or the pre-organizational committee, which has been operating now and which has secured the bid. But I don't understand what the process will be for organizing around it, what the county and Park City's involvement will be, and when that will kick off and what its trajectory will look like.
All right. Well, back to the agenda then. The health department yesterday presented data on Summit County's health, and it looks like we outperform other areas. Deputy Health Director Kendra Babbitt says that zip code matters more than genetic code when it comes to health. So what does that mean?
I think what I took away from it was that there are certain social and socioeconomic and, you know, other factors that affect your longevity or your well-being, and I mean it's not that surprising, but the nice thing about the report was that our county stacks up pretty well, in longevity and in this metric of, you know, they're minor. You know, she showed a demographic of the, or a graphic of the District of Columbia that is this square tilted, you know, to look like a diamond, and it takes in parts of Maryland and Virginia and different zip codes, showing then the projected longevity of different people, and those living right in the city were living 77 years, and those in some of the surrounding areas in the Beltway were like 83 years, you know, like a 6-7 year difference. And, there's a lot of factors, you know, in the inner city versus living in the country, or, you know, and there were just a lot of insights that she shared that go beyond just physical health.
Well, Summit County leads Utah in a number of the categories, including education and the so-called good hardship Index. That's a combination of different economic conditions. So how much of this is a result of policy and maybe just proximity, as you say, in the country or living a resort lifestyle?
You know, I was thinking of the Chamber's new branding, the Mountain Kind. And I think living in the mountains and the quality of life that it affords and the air quality and the recreational opportunities and the incentives to be outside maybe and to move around. And then, of course, it's maybe more expensive, unfortunately, so maybe there's a higher level of education on average because education often drives earning power. And so I think the Mountain Kind plays a role.
So with the claims by the health department that Summit County is the healthiest place in Utah, does that mean we can focus money on other problems in the upcoming budget, given the projected shortfall?
I don't think that's probably the case. I mean, first of all, those kind of gains are accretive over many years, and it's not like, oh yeah, we're one and done, and then we, you know, check that box and we go on. It's every day, every month, every year, every cohort, every class, every generation of you know, doing things that lead to that level of health or of well-being. It's not like, oh, that was done because we spent X and now we've got this report, now we don't need to spend it.
All right. We should note also that the community health assessment, an opportunity for residents to have their say about how health policy and dollars should be spent, is available online until this fall. Also wanted to note at the same time that we report that Summit County is the healthiest place in Utah, Summit County also leads the state in skin cancer rates. Any way we can improve there?
You know, that's an ongoing battle. We need to cover up and sunscreen up more than we do, probably. I mean, I know I do. And make sure we have regular dermatological checkups, and those stats are probably related. Our well-being is because we're out of doors a lot, so there is an impact. To mitigate for it, we got to be more careful.
Okay, moving on. The council approved the final slate of property value appeals from various taxpayers. It appeared this bunch included the Park City Mountain and Deer Valley resorts. The hearing officer rejected the resorts' appeal. So, do you know if the resorts plan to appeal this to the state tax commission?
I don't. It wouldn't surprise me, but you know, when you have big dollar appeals like that, it's probably worth continuing to try to fight for what you think it ought to be.
All right. In other business, the county council unanimously approved a mutual aid agreement with Uinta County, Wyoming for fire service along the state border. The Wyoming Fire Department wants to revisit the agreement because it hasn't changed since it was first created 24 years ago. Do you know what it is they want to change?
Well, it's what we did change. It was that we didn't really have much of a fee structure in there, and they wanted to change the compensation they received for coming to our aid. The reality is that in most of the time, it's not universally this way, but most of the time when we have an issue on the North Slope in the county, we rely on Uinta County. You know, yet the best way at certain times of the year, maybe the only way to get to Mirror Lake Highway, the North Slope side, is through Evanston. So if someone mobilizing from Colville, North Summit Fire, or the Sheriff's Office to go do something, say at Manorlands, it's a pretty circuitous route when Uinta County's right there. So it's probably more rare that we come to their aid. And so, you know, this was an overdue update. It's the reimbursement schedule is reasonable. And North Summit Fire approved it a couple weeks ago. We approved it yesterday, and Uinta County had approved it prior.
Okay. The council also agreed to put a sales tax proposal on November's ballot. The vote was unanimous. It's being billed as the Emergency Services Sales Tax. Talk to us once again, what does that refer to?
The legislature has allowed counties of our class and others to put up to a 1% sales tax for emergency services such as search and rescue, EMS, and the kind of tourism impacts, landfill and other things. And we voted yesterday to place a ballot question that would say, shall the county, yes or no, this is a question for the voters, shall the county impose a 0.5%, a half a percent, or one penny on a $2 purchase sales tax for those purposes? And so that will appear on the ballot as a proposition.
All right. Why did you go ahead and limit this in terms of the half percent and not approve what was presented in the ballot language for up to 1%?
Well, the ballot language for the last several times that we've seen drafts of it has always been at a half a percent. We recite in the resolution that the state law allows us to go up to 1%. The half a percent will generate the amount of money that we can use. If we went beyond that, we wouldn't be able to use the additional money because the purposes for which it can be spent are limited. And we've done the math, and we list in the ballot measure those purposes. I've summarized a few of them. There was no point in going beyond that, and we don't want to tax, you know, our citizens any more than is necessary. More than half of these sales taxes are collected by visitors, and so this is a good connection between the impact of the visitors and paying for some of those things that are caused by the visitation.
Yeah, well, and that's the county's financial department says about 65% of sales tax revenue is paid for by non-residents. How do they come up with that figure? How do you know that?
You know, that number is a little higher than I have. There's data from the state tax commission that is that can be crunched to come up with those estimates. I don't know the exact methodology, but it's data from there.
All right. Well, I'm guessing, you know, maybe from credit cards or debit cards or something, but if people are paying cash, there's no way to know if that person is, a Summit County resident or not.
True.
All right.
I would think most purchases are not with cash, though.
Okay. There will have to be a public hearing about this tax. Has the council decided on a date yet?
We believe that it has to be no more than 45 days before the election, and it has to be at least 4 days before the election. So our calculus is it's sometime in October, basically.
All right. And then also pro and con statements need to be submitted. Any idea who will submit those?
No, as I understand it, I'm glad you asked the question. There's a window of time where parties can submit to the, I believe it's to Eve First, the county clerk, pro and con statements, for and against statements. And then there's a process for reviewing those and deciding what actually goes in the voter information guide.
Okay, Chris. I'm out of time. I'm going to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Yesterday, Epic Promise and Park City Community Foundation hosted a moderated panel to learn more about how climate change affects not only our personal health, but our mental health and some of the steps that are being able to solve the crisis. In the studio, I have E.E. Sue. She served as moderator. She's also a board member for the Community Foundation's Climate Fund Steering Committee, along with Sarah Huey, who is Senior Manager of Communications for Park City Mountain. Thanks, ladies, for joining me.
Good morning.
E.E., maybe you start by telling us why this conversation happened.
This was such a new conversation. You know, we talk about climate a lot in our community and beyond. And when I was asked to moderate this panel, I was super excited. Because a lot of times we talk about climate and we talk about it in terms of snowpack, or we talk about it in terms of our carbon emissions and how we're going to reduce that. But this conversation was really about our community and how climate change will affect not only our community in terms of public health, but the individuals within our community, and really digging into the intersection and the connectedness of climate change with public health, mental wellness, you know, overlaying the equity and inclusion factor in that, which is so very important for our community. And so, you know, it was just kind of this fresh look and reframe at the conversation. We really wanted to lead with that in the beginning. So it was a very important conversation. And I give kudos to the team at Vail and Epic Promise for coming up with the intersectionality and wanting to present this material in this way, because of all the work that they've done in the previous years and hearing what's important in our community.
I want to talk a little bit more about that equity and inclusion, because I thought that was fascinating there. You also started the conversation, though, with some new data points that talk about what's happening climate-wise. Do you have those on you?
Yes, I do. I don't have them on my phone right now, but I do remember them, because I did some research before the panel, and NOAA, which is the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, they came out with a report that in June 2024, it was the record. It was ranked the highest in global surface temperatures since they were recording temperatures since 1850, June 2024. And that is both land temperatures and ocean surface temperatures. And then the other data point that I had was that just a week ago, I believe it was July 22nd, again, I don't have my notes, it was July 22nd or 21st, 23rd, somewhere around there, was the day of the highest recorded temperature globally. So that was just, that was surprising to me. You know, I'd heard the news about the highest global temperature by, you know, that day in July, but I did not know that it had been 13 months of highest recorded temperatures, 13 months consecutively. Our ocean temperatures have been going up 15 for the last 15 months. So that is some very stark and, I thought, surprising data, and yet it's not surprising. And I said this yesterday, because we feel it. We feel it here in Park City. We know it's hotter.
Oh, yeah. And I also wanted to bring up just, I guess, one of my takeaways was the fact that, you know, we had the Olympic announcement last week, and in 10 years, the Olympics return to Utah. And I guess it's like, how do you see that? I mean, me, both of you here, I mean, is that a line in the sand here that we've got to do something to, or is it a kind of a goal to work towards, that we know that we could have Olympics, Winter Olympics in Utah after 10 years? Any thoughts?
Well, sustainability has always been, from what I understand, a key in the Olympic bidding process, and it is core to who we are in Park City, and that's how we've sold ourselves to the IOC. So I hope so. I feel like this is going to just accelerate. The Olympics is just going to help us accelerate and put a little bit more drive into achieving those goals. And so I hope our community can really rally around that. Sarah?
Yeah, I totally agree. And we're very excited about the 2034 announcement that came out last week. A lot of talk on the panel yesterday had to do with just communication among nonprofits, communicating with your neighbors, and empowering one another with what you can do. And the 2034 Winter Games gives us a future point of time to aim for as a group, and to share that hope, and like a target, like you said, or a finish line, if I can use a Summer Olympics analogy there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk that, because we did hear changes start local, right? I mean, we can talk about the big picture, but really, when you come down to it, it's what we're doing right here, right now, in our own community. And Sarah, I guess Vail Resorts put out in 2017 a big goal. Maybe you can give us a recap on where we stand with that.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. That's our commitment to zero, and that was started in 2017. The company Vail Resorts at the time said, we need to be doing something about sustainability. We operate in the great outdoors, and we care about the environment. Where is the roadmap? Who is leading the industry on this? And really, there was no roadmap. So they set out some very ambitious goals, gave themselves a timeline that by 2030, we would achieve zero net emissions through our operation, achieve zero waste to landfill, which you see often in our day lodges and restaurants. You see the waste sorting and really coming down to the smallest pieces of waste and making sure that the maximum amount of diversion is done. So we are working towards zero waste to landfill, and then zero net operating impact on forests and habitat. You might have heard about the Electron Solar Project that came online here in Utah earlier this spring. Park City Mountain has been 100% powered by renewable energy since 2022, powered by our commitment to zero. But what this addition of Electron Solar does is now it means we're 100% solar and on grid, giving our whole network more flexibility to continue to work toward that zero emissions goal.
One of the comments that just really kind of struck me, and because I'd never thought about it, right? And it was from John Ryan, the representative from Vail Resorts, basically saying, when you think about having food on the mountain, I mean, it starts from the Cisco truck driving up from Salt Lake, you know, and into there. And now we've got snowmobiles or snowcats or something taking it up to the mountain and then dealing with it there and then having to come back off the mountain again. I mean, that's a huge operation for a hamburger.
Right. Yeah, we talked a lot yesterday about co-benefits as well. And so there is a business case that can be made for this. If anyone who's listening has had a great meal at Mid Mountain Lodge, at Summit House, or over at Lookout Cabin on the midpoint of the Orange Bubble Express, not only do we have to get that food up, but any piece of waste that is created through that process of creating that delicious meal, that then has to come down. And that is fueled by our snowcats or sometimes trucks. And we have seen a reduction in fuel use with our on-mountain vehicles by reducing the weight, the pounds and tonnage of material that has to go up and down the mountain to create that experience.
Yeah. You know what I think was really cool, Leslie, is that John Ryan had said yesterday that when they made these goals, they didn't exactly know how to get there. And that one of the things that came out of the panel is that when it comes to sustainability work, like there's a lot of trial and error and we're kind of figuring it out as we go. And so, you know, again, you know, I think Park City leadership, whether it's been business or government, they've been really courageous and ambitious to say, like, we're going to make these goals and we're going to figure it out as we go. We might make a mistake. We might need to pivot and try something else. We might need to bring more partners in. We don't know how this is going to look, but we're going to get there. And I think that that's something that we could really be proud of. And back to your question about the 2034 Olympics, that's, you know, only going to accelerate that and push that forward.
And something else that kind of struck me, too, was, you know, you just mentioned it. Everybody feels that it's hotter, and yet we have those unseen populations who are impacted first and worse by climate change. But I think of my own spouse, right? I mean, he's out there painting houses in the sun all day long. It's darn hot out there. And then, you know, using toxic chemicals on top of it. But specifically about the unseen population of people who aren't, you know, maybe well represented.
You know, Leslie, I used to think about climate justice, and I used to think about, you know, the displacement of people from Kiribati who had to, you know, leave their island community and move to other communities, those who are malnourished because there's drought and they can't get food. But we have climate effects right here in our community. You know, today I was driving in, and I was looking at the AQI, which is 52, which is considered poor. And I was thinking about people like, you know, your husband, those who have to, you know, be out in the heat, they have to be out there in the poor air quality. They are the ones who are bearing the brunt of this changing climate. You know, we have pregnant women, we have children, we have elderly who are already have, you know, are susceptible to health conditions, but it's exacerbated by the poor air quality. It's exacerbated by poor air ventilation. And actually, indoor air pollution is even worse than outdoor air pollution because it just accumulates in them. They may not have the resources to have air filters. Like, there is this big, you know, we talked about this equity problem when it comes to climate impacts. Yeah, that was a big, you know, Mari Leining from the CEO of People's Health Clinic was there yesterday, and I think some of her comments were really hit us hard because the climate, it's hitting us here in our community, and again, it's unseen. We need to give them a voice.
We also heard John Ryan kind of allude to it, and I didn't really get the details of that some kind of announcement was going to be released today by the chamber in terms of some sustainable work being done. Do any of you know what he was talking about?
Yes, I think that's certainly the chamber's announcement to make, but the Park City community has been working toward this certification of being, I'm gonna say the name wrong, so stay tuned for it from the chamber, but it's like a Green Mountain community, and many parts of the community here have worked toward the documentation of that in order, you know, to report it to the group that creates that. And Vail Resorts has supported this in other mountain communities where we have resorts, and so we were able to step in and say, here's the way through this process that we have seen be successful in the past, not just the work that we're doing in our own operation, but navigating that in order to inspire the community and, again, you know, have something hopeful to share with our neighbors and say, this is who we are. This is our identity as a sustainable community. Let's find those steps we can take.
And I think that's what we started off trying to do, was just how do we grow that hope level, kind of taking it a step from when we had Molly Kawada here in town earlier this year. At the same time, I think many people feel it's just like, you know what, I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So how is it that I think we heard a lot of optimism yesterday, but mm-hmm. I mean, how do we sustain that optimism?
I, you know, collective action, getting involved. They say that the best way to thwart despair and depression around climate is actually collective action. You know, one thing that came out of yesterday's panel was that a lot of the work, and Emily Quinton said this, the sustainability director at Summit County, she said all the work she does in sustainability is cross-sector collaboration. It's about collective action. It's about getting everybody together to figure out what is the best path forward. And I think that doing these things, not necessarily only in isolation on an individual level, but doing it together helps build community, you know, and again, that idea of despair when you're with other people, when you're working towards a shared goal, that uplifts you. There's a emotional, mental wellness aspect of that.
Yes, I think that conversation that you referred to, Leslie, earlier in the spring with Molly Kawahata here, really looking at the intersectionality of these different concerns, personal health, environmental health, and the global climate, it can seem daunting, but hopeful, this is a quote I wrote down from yesterday, hopeful individuals talk, hopeful communities think outside the box and find one solution.
Okay, where do we go from here?
I think we have to keep talking. I think we have to keep having the conversation. That's one of our panelists said that is the one thing that we could continue to do to ensure that sustainability moves forward is everybody needs to have the conversation. And that means talking to neighbors, that means talking to friends, that means going to our city council, letting them know what we want, who we are, what represents us, that the environment, the climate is important to us, not only because we love to ski and we love to recreate, but because we care about all the members of our community.
Yeah, and I neglected because I did let Sarah talk a little bit about that commitment to zero, but I know with the Park City Community Foundation, there's also that commitment to zero food waste. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes, we have a zero food waste goal by 2030. In June, we launched our residential curbside food waste collection. And it's underway. We have a goal of getting 1,000 households signed up in Greater Park City in the Snyderville Basin, and it's well underway. We're going to have a lot of exciting updates to that in the fall, so hopefully we'll be able to join you then and tell you more about that.
Okay. And I think it's worth mentioning that those first 1,000 are free.
Yes, absolutely.
With a grant
Thank
from
you for
Park
that,
City
Sarah.
Mountain.
Yes.
So
yes.
Don't hesitate to check out the Community Foundation's
yes.
website and get signed up.
All the startup costs for those 1,000 new households are free.
Wonderful. Okay, Sarah Hu, EESU, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
What was supposed to be a celebration of this year's winning cocktail and mocktail recipes instead is a conversation now about playing fair. In the studio to tell us what happened and why there are no winners this year in the cocktail mocktail contest, I have the executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association who puts on the contest, along with a former KPCW DJ and a computer expert. He's owner and founder of Park City Computer Guy, John Cannon. Thanks so much for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Ginger, maybe start with just a little bit of background. The association has been running this contest for years, and specifically this year for the last month, and I get a call last night that no winners are coming in.
Yeah, you know, it's super unfortunate. This is a long-standing community event that goes back, like you said, 15 plus years. In the beginning, it was an in-person cocktail contest and kind of morphed into what it is now, the online contest. And the reason we changed to an online contest was to allow Park City residents and visiting guests to be a part of selecting the winning cocktail. And also to run the contest for an entire month really gives us time to highlight all of the different cocktails, to, you know, give them exposure, whether it's in radio interviews or television interviews, and drive business to the participating restaurants, which ultimately that's what the Park City Area Restaurant Association is here to do, is to support our members. So the online format gives us that opportunity to do that. And the way the voting works is you go online, you enter your email, you verify that you're 21, and you submit a vote for the cocktail of your choice. Then the system sends your email a confirmation saying you want to cast a vote for this cocktail, and you submit yes. And what that does is it confirms that it is a valid email, because several years ago we did have folks making up emails to cast votes. So we created a system that I just outlined. However, unfortunately, this year we had some participants circumvent the system and write a program that started casting votes for their respective cocktails and then subsequently also confirming those votes.
When did you know there was a problem?
We started seeing an issue on Saturday. A couple of the entries brought it to our attention. However, our web folks started suspecting that there were issues. And sure enough, there were.
Hmm. So I appreciate you coming in to explain this. I mean, are you going to be releasing the names of those who were involved? I mean, I think some community members might think, I'm going to boycott them.
Yeah, no. You know, the whole point of this contest is to, you know, we're a community here, and this is a community contest to support our amazing mixologists, and that should be the spirit of this contest. And releasing who was involved in this is not in the best interests of our community or the spirit of this contest.
Will they be banned from future competitions?
Well, I mean, that's yet to be determined. That's a board decision. And to be fair, my web people are still combing through all of the data. We ended up with over 200,000 votes from these bots being created. And so this, you know, if it's just a lot of work on the back end to kind of sort through it. So because we could not fairly determine in a timely manner who won the contest, we have opted to just skip a winner this year.
Okay. No winner for 2024. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And really, the prize money isn't a big deal here. I mean, how much money are we talking about?
Well, each mixologist would have won $500, and then we support it with ad campaigns. We had interviews with you this morning. We had ads going in the Park Record. We had Fox 13 interviews happening next week, again to support the winner and bring awareness to the restaurants and all the amazing mixologists that we have in our community. So it's very unfortunate for those that played fair, that this happened.
Yeah. So how will you go forward? I mean, is there any way to determine what the legitimate votes were and what they are not?
Yes, you can extract the data from the back end, and we can see the emails, we can see the date time that they voted, and we can also see the date stamp of when the vote was confirmed, which is all within seconds of each other, which is actually impossible. Because if you think about it, you have to hit the vote, then an email has to come to you, you have to open that email, and you have to click confirm, and that's not happening in a second.
All right, well, John Concannon, I appreciate you coming in and trying to explain this. You had nothing to do with this,
innocent.
Other than I was calling you from a concert last night saying, I need a computer expert to kind of try and give us an idea of why this happened. Can you kind of give us that?
Well, just go a little bit backwards. You know, the software that was involved with, was probably involved with this, is also involved with Google indexing millions and millions and millions of websites. So when someone does a search for cocktails in Park City, that they come up with some good results. So sometimes the programs are rather not too hard, or simple to create, and as you can see, it can be very daunting to try to prevent that. This was kind of like, as Ginger was saying, like a hometown simple contest, but done a number of years. This doesn't have a billion-dollar budget such as Facebook or X that can combat this. So, you know, God bless people's motivation to do these kind of things. It's possible, and sometimes all not that hard, especially with the right knowledge.
Yeah, so it's based on software as opposed to, because we often kind of hear about how our data is sold to the black market, right? And people can just buy lists of emails. But it couldn't really be done that way because that email wouldn't come back to the right person or the person trying to scan this.
Right. Yeah. So software can be written so that I'm going to submit and then I'm going to reply because they know how the operation is supposed to be done with a human, and then they can modify it so that software can do it, which, as Ginger noted too, that, you know, no human could respond and get that email and, you know, and submit the response, the confirmation within seconds.
Yeah. So have you ever heard of something like this happening?
Well, it's happened in many elections, especially in 2016, even 2020, just in different ways to kind of have software that will send out a lot of information at once. So it's not that's the world we live in today, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does somebody like the Restaurant Association protect themselves?
It's tough because it involves a lot of money, and at some point you're inundated. And the expense to potentially try to prevent this from happening is way over the one's budget.
Right. Interesting. So what do you kind of look at, you know, for years to come?
You know, we'll have to do a deep dive into how we can create a fair voting system that meets the expectations of the participants. You know, this is a community cocktail contest. It does not cost any of the participants a dime to participate in it. It's all funded by the Restaurant Association. You just have to be a member. So it is unfortunate that, you know, this has occurred and that all the creativity that the fair entries created didn't get, you know, recognized, I guess.
Okay. Good reason to go drink. Any other thoughts, John, that you wanted to share?
No, I just wish people played by the fair of the rules and understand that it is a community event.
Okay. John Concannon, Ginger Wicks, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. And finally, the World Anti-Doping Agency investigating after some Olympic athletes have blamed contaminated food for their positive drug test. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
The World Anti-Doping Agency, known as WADA, announced Tuesday it is investigating why athletes are escaping scrutiny after testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs. It marks a change in tone for the agency, which has previously claimed the positive tests were appropriately handled. WADA has been under fire from U.S. authorities for months. Pressure ramped up after the International Olympic Committee awarded the 2034 Games to Salt Lake City last week. The IOC added a condition to the host contract requiring Utah organizers to lobby the U.S. government to end its investigation into WADA's handling of Chinese doping. Lawmakers have equated the last-minute move to blackmail. WADA said Tuesday there is, quote, clearly an issue of food contamination in several countries around the world. The agency said it is, quote, generally concerned about the number of cases that are being closed without sanction when it is not possible to challenge the contamination theory. Along with China, WADA said there have also been several cases in the United States. However, the anti-doping agency did not provide any details on those cases. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And finally this, that abortion is legal up to 18 weeks while the state of Utah awaits a lower court's ruling on Planned Parenthood's lawsuit, the Supreme Court making that ruling today. Utahns, again, will continue to have access to abortion up to 18 weeks of pregnancy.